listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Gentlemen, it's time for your Shell and Tell.
It is time for some Shell and Tell. It's been a minute since we've had a chance to talk Terps, and there's been a lot of news, a lot of things going on around both programs, football and basketball.
Yep. We got the pipes and we got the homer here, but where's that expert guy at?
He's right here.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Ed Gaffier. What's going on, Ahmed?
How are you guys doing?
Good, man. How about yourself? Good?
No complaints at all.
Good, man. Well, I know you've been busy. I know you've had a lot on your plate over the last couple of weeks. Before we get into the football and basketball side of things, man, let's talk a little bit about what's new and exciting over Inside Black and Gold. What's been going on there? I know a lot of exciting things for you.
Partnership with the Journalism School last week, hired Anthony Mama. He's going to be helping out with the student perspective, another guy helping out with basketball, Pat as well, and Chris Frazier, his first Maryland cross game over High Point. So that was definitely a much improved coverage for the site. So definitely happy about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, lacrosse really started out with a bang, but they dropped 21 points or something crazy on High Point.
They took care of that game one pretty early. So it was the first game without Jared Bernhardt, but it didn't show us any signs of it.
Yeah, they're one of those teams, like the ladies basketball team, where their season kind of starts in the tournament. They're just a whole different level than most people they play. But they got one hell of a schedule this year. They play every bigwig there is in lacrosse.
Right, for sure. Now, outside of the staff expansion, we heard some new site upgrades going on. Tell us a little bit about the things with the new player series, thanks to the NIL.
Yeah, I was really really happy about that. That's something I've been kind of working with on the side for about a month now. But I just posted on Monday a blog from a freshman safety, Gavin Gibson. He's just talking about moving in his first week in campus, reacting to the Brian Stewart news. So just thought it was a really good opportunity, shedding the light on and providing that, player perspective, things like that. Wasn't something that you were really able to take advantage of in the past, and kind of thought about it, and especially thought kind of leading up to the spring game would be a good idea. And then obviously again announced it on Monday on the site for subscribers, but more than elated to announce that we will have a new site, a full site with separate tabs for football, basketball, non-rev, recruiting. We have merchandise for Inside the Black and Gold ready to go. We'll have a message board ready to go. So, we're still working on a couple of things, a couple of tweaks, go live, things like that. So on the tech side. We should have that out in the next week or two. Definitely excited about that, but definitely some good things come down the pipeline.
Big things happening around Inside Black and Gold, Ryan.
Yeah, really exciting. That Gavin Adams thing with the NIL, that's really cool. Day in the life of a player. Just it's kind of the inside look we haven't had to be able to get in a while. So that's going to be a really cool series to see throughout the time that you get to put those out. And they're going to be out, periodically.
Yeah, it'll be every 2 weeks, and then in April, once spring practice is rolling, every Monday. So be on the lookout.
All right, man. Well, let's dive into some football talk. Let's catch up on some things. There's been a lot of things that we haven't had a chance to talk about as a group yet. We talked a little last week about the new addition, the Wall from the Netherlands. I'm not going to try his name, Ryan. You tell me what his
Leon
name is.
Leon Mujezovic.
Yeah,
is. Is it close enough?
Is that right, Ahmed?
Lerajan Mujezinovic.
Okay, I missed a syllable.
I'll give you like a C on that one.
But yeah, big, literally and figuratively, a big addition for Maryland.
Yeah, heard he was able to actually enroll in spring classes and get in early, which is exciting for the Terps.
Yeah, he was able to enroll last week. Was able to after signing day just finalize something. Just because obviously coming over from Europe and Garden City and things like that, and obviously you got to remember when he was in JUCO, a lot of things went virtual. So just figuring out the credits and whatnot just took a little bit of time. But as you mentioned, he's on campus now. So yeah. Three offensive tackles instead of the all five are on campus. So Lerodon joins Andre Roy and. Max McCree, who's another JUCO offensive tackle. But, you know, especially kind of coming in, we've talked about it countless times, just with tackle being such a big priority for Maryland this cycle, finding that fifth guy, and especially a high ceiling guy. You know, all of his coaches spoke very, very highly of him.
That's awesome. I'm excited about it. Can't have enough big boys.
And, you know, we're kind of the kicker podcast, man. So this one got me kind of excited.
We tend to go to to special teams a lot, good and bad.
Yeah, I mean, we got, I guess, in my opinion, the biggest name there was in kicking in the transfer portal here with Chad Ryland. Wasn't he just basically consensus number one?
Yeah, I mean, he was, especially by the staff, he was viewed as the best specialist in the portal. And it's hard to, when you look at who's out in the market right now, it's hard to say that there's a guy that's more accomplished. You know, I think in Ryland, in both facets, and obviously on the kicking side of things, where he's able to, he has improved length over what Joseph Pertino did, probably about 10 yards or so, I'd say, maybe 10, 12 yards. So that's big. But then the other side of it is when you think about during the regular season, when Maryland special teams coverage units just kind of struggled. You think about Ryland, who averages about 10, 11 yards more than Joseph Pertino on kickoff. So again, that's just huge for both sides of it. And it didn't really seem like kicker was going to be a priority. You know, there were a couple of existing targets that I had, you know, just kind of come across and thrown out to the staff. But, you know, with Harrison Beattie coming off injury and Jack Hose, he is just not just there yet. So getting a guy like Chad Ryland, where he's able to go in 1 year and then potentially the NFL to get fit.
17 consecutive made field goals, the second longest active streak in the country to finish the year. 19 to 22 on field goals with a 55-yard long. 55 yard long.
Changes games in college.
And I saw some warm-up kicks of him kicking 60 to 65 yarders. So the guy's got the leg for sure. Perfect 47 to 47 on PAT. So this is big. I think this is bigger than the credit that it's getting for the Terps, because again, especially with how this offense was once they got inside the red zone, you know, there was a lot of production that the offense had between the 20s. And then we got down to the 20s, especially in the latter half of the year against the Big Ten. They just struggled to get into the end zone, but they didn't have the confidence in Pietrino to send him out there enough. You get a guy like this in the books, I think it goes a long way for scoring for this team.
Hey, we've had a couple big kickers out there over the years that we've just been had the faith in. It really felt like it changed the game. I mean, especially with the way this offense runs, just like the flying through the air, what happens? You get down to the red zone, everything gets condensed, it's harder. But if you can basically guarantee yourself 3 points with this kind of talent, I mean, this guy, 141 out of 145 PATs, this is a model of consistency here. So as long as there's a good snap, that ball's going through the uprights.
Right? Yeah. and you know, there were a couple of times where even we mentioned it during the season, during Big Ten play, where Maryland was kind of at that 35, 37 yard line, and you know, you don't really know where Maryland can go. It's kind of that no-go, no-win territory, and Maryland opted to punt it. So having a guy like Ryland alters, you know, your third down calls if you're able to get a, you know, a 52, 53 yarder with the wind maybe behind you, things like that. So it just opens up a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
You punt in that like wishy-washy zone this year, you're going to answer a lot more questions from media. We're not going to take that, well, the analytics tell us exactly where the line is bullshit, because 55 has been hit.
Yeah.
Well, one of the positions that we still wanted to see where the team was going to head with additions was quarterback, right? We talked about, you know, losing Reese to the transfer portal and not having, you know, that extra depth or the extra scholarship quarterback on class. Yep. But we get one in Cam Edge, who finished with 2,990 passing yards and 27 touchdowns to only two interceptions. Ahmed, that sounds real good.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely just a really impressive signing, and I mentioned it for subscribers, but it was actually pretty interesting that Cam Edge, it was around the time that A.J. Swan committed. Maryland has said that it was after A.J. Swan decommitted, and Cam Edge said it was a little bit before that. But regardless, Cam reached out to Maryland about potentially reclassifying. He knew that if Maryland was going to do it, or if he was going to do it, Maryland was going to be the spot. He was very hot. Fond of Coach Enos, Coach Loxley, and like we mentioned, you know, the Swan decommitment lost that second quarterback in Maryland's 2022 class. So with Cam reclassifying, that's a big need. Unfortunately, you can't get him in for spring because he is doubling up on some courses right now to satisfy his high school requirements. You know, just for the long term development for this room, quarterback room, and especially when you think about it, it's now Cam Edge and Jaden Saray, two very well liked, well respected local quarterbacks. So that's another addition that bodes well. But Cam Edge, you know, he he even mentioned to me, he remembered that Maryland was the first offer. Obviously, him and Coach Brooks, Scott Chadwick, Coach Enos, you know, it kind of all seemed to really come together and was very, very timely.
That speaks highly of his character, you know, and who he is and the commitment that he has to this program to value the fact that we were the first one to come offer him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, honor that commitment. It's pretty awesome.
And you also have seen, you know, kind of this flurry of reclassifications this year because people are trying to get in with the NIL kind of still being unregulated, the transfer portal being like the free for all that it is now, all these things. But this guy is kind of not your normal because this is a reclassification back to where he should have graduated. This is that old school, like, hold the guy back and get better and older than all your other people. Right. So now he got held back, was better, and jumped forward to his normal graduating class.
Yeah, exactly that. So that's why I kind of made it all possible. But yeah, you know, you mentioned, and it wasn't like a Quinn Ewers situation where, like you said, it wasn't NIL. It was actually the opposite. He wanted to come in because he wanted to play under Coach Enos, just learn from him. So I think that's pretty interesting. But you're right. You know, that's definitely an aspect of high school recruiting that can't get overlooked now.
Well, speaking of class, right? We've seen the ranking for this class vary and fluctuate pretty quickly. We've seen it in the 50s go all the way up to the edge of top 25. Now with Edge in the fold, where does this class end up rounding out?
Yeah, you know, kind of consensus right now is in the high to mid 30s, 35th on Rivals, 31st on 24/7. So that's kind of that seems to be the consensus right now. A couple 4-stars. Then obviously, when you think about Jacob Copeland and Vandarius Cowan, the Florida wide receiver and the West Virginia linebacker coming in. So 24/7, they do a total combined team ranking. I don't have that handy just yet, but yeah. So I mean, at the end of the day, I think that was kind of interesting. And you mentioned, you know, I mentioned at the beginning of the cycle, I thought Maryland would finish kind of in that 30-35 range. And you mentioned that, you know, Maryland was in the 50s. Logan Delizio, who's on the site, helps me out a lot. He used to joke that it was a show more class because on the networks, you would have to click show more to find Maryland's class.
Right.
So he let me know that I was well off my prediction. So shout out Locks for getting me on.
Yeah, I was actually looking for that number, so I'm glad you pulled it. I was like, he either said top 35 or top 30, and I'm like, I want to know if he hit it or if he was just damn close.
Yeah, I think I went top 30, 35, but I'm just going to say 35 for the record since no one pulled it off.
And to be perfectly honest, the rankings on this is a little weird. I mean, you have 4 4-star athletes, not including the number one kicker in the portal or Cowan or Copeland that were both 4-stars out of high school. And then when Edge reclassified, they took his 4-star away and made him a 3-star. So, like, this could easily have been a high 20s class if they would have just left, you know, the stars where they were.
Right.
Not to say stars matter, not to say the rankings matter, because Fred hates them. But I'm just saying, like, this is a very good class. And honestly, you know, when you're talking a top 40 class, I'm kind of happy with it.
I'm happy.
You got to develop after that. You have to make these kids stay around, and you have to get them better.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think Maryland just really needed to obviously just get more immediate impact talent in the program. And then but you need to create and build up that depth. So I think just being able to get in these consistent top 35, 40 classes. I mean, at the end of the day, it's what stinks is that when you look in the Big Ten rankings, Maryland is still last in the Big Ten East. That's just, it's just wild. But yeah, you're right. You just elevating the talent level across the roster.
East is going to evaporate. I can feel it. We're just getting rid of these divisions. Let's go.
All right.
Been rumblings for a while, so
you can have all the great talent that you want in the world, but you got to have the right coaching staff to kind of meld it all together, right? And there's been a lot of changes. There's been some guys that have been here for a very brief amount of time and then left. There's a lot to catch up with on this coaching staff. Let's start with the good in the new mattress salesman in Gunter Brewer, because that picture is god awful. He looks like a mattress salesman to me. 4 decades of experience starting at Marshall, North Carolina, Oklahoma State, Ole Miss, and the Eagles before joining Louisville in 2009. Apparently also worked with Randy Moss, because even Randy Moss was like, damn, you're still coaching? Congrats. Pretty awesome. What are your thoughts on Gunter Brewer, and what does he bring to this staff?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mentioned it actually on the site, and it was before, obviously, the bad news. But, you know, I had some recruits that they mentioned that they met Brewer on visits and things like that when they're at Maryland, and all of them said that he was just a very fun guy to be around, very laughable, very light. So I thought that was really very nice. And then obviously on the field, has the experience, obviously, with, like you mentioned, the 4 decades, has a lineage where he has proven where he's been able to develop this top talent. And obviously coached Justin Blackmon as well. And most recently, Tutu Atwell, who's over with the LA Rams. And another tidbit with him is four of the top five North Carolina wide receivers in career receptions were coached by Gunter Brewer. So he's very he's very much known as a the technical kind of coach. And then obviously having the GA, Derek Keith, back in the program, I think that that duo is pretty good. But Brewer, recruiting-wise, because I know everyone is very interested about that, he'll help out a lot down in North Carolina. And that's an area where between Miller, now Brewer, and Scott Chadwick, where Maryland's able to really get their foot into the door.
That's awesome. That's great, because you need that flux of talent from that those southern states, North Carolina, South Carolina, that area, man. There's a lot of that's a hotbed for talent.
Brewer also coached Dez Bryant, and if somebody gives me Dez Bryant vibes, Copeland gives me hella Dez Bryant vibes. So it might be a nice little comparison. Get him it coached up right and get
I'm
going.
I'm excited for it, man. You get a coach that's held in high regard like that, who has that kind of experience with a wide receiver core, with the talent that we have, man. I think this is going to bode well for this team. It's going to do nothing but good. But we got to go to the other side. We got to talk bad, right? And we got to talk about this steel debacle. Walk me through this, Ahmed. Make it make sense, because
that's not going to happen. But you can walk me through it.
I just don't understand. How does a guy commit to something? He's here for 3 days. The rumors are that he's out and about and recruiting, and he's already got his name on the office, and 3 days later, walk away.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the shrewd side of college football. At first, when I saw it, I was just like, that seems kind of weird. My heart stops. It always stops when there's something that goes unexpected. And that was what happened at first. And I was like, well, let me learn a little bit more about this, because we had reported that Steele was quietly involved with the program. You know, we had mentioned actually on the site, or another subscriber mentioned Kevin Sumlin's in. So there were a lot of guys that have been kind of involved with the program just behind the scenes. But Steele, it did. Everything sounded like it was expected. He had the verbal agreement. He was working. He was in the office, was working with alongside the coaches, and then kind of up and said, yeah, I'm going to Miami. And it's kind of been open checkbook down in Miami ever since Cristobal went there, ever since the Boosters AD went with decided to go with Cristobal. That's really what it's all been funded by. But sounded like, even though Kevin Steele, I think between the Tennessee and Auburn jobs, he made what was it, $1.9 million. So you can make the argument that money should not have been a primary concern, but you know, at the end of the day, money talks, and that was eventually the difference maker. So it was, you could say, worse than Josh Gattis' situation.
Funny enough, guess who's joining him down in Miami? Josh Gattis is headed down that way.
There you go.
This whole situation is just a shit show to me. I mean, it's apparently par for the course with this guy, because everything that you've heard with this guy is that he's been real floozy and jumped from one thing to the next and all that stuff. He's got a ton of experience, and he comes from elite level programs, and he's worked with some of the best, but this is kind of his MO.
What just blows my mind, like, Gattis was one thing, because Gattis had verbally agreed this, that, and the other, but I don't remember him like doing work, being in the building. Like, that's the part that confuses me, because when you go to a job, like as a person that's not a coach, you have to go and you have to sign your papers and do all these things and so
before you get a check.
Before, like, you were put on the books beforehand. Right. Now, I can see if that had happened, we signed the papers, and you know, Miami with their open checkbooks just like, well, fuck it, I'll pay that buyout, I don't care. But that's apparently not, there was like no contract.
Yeah.
There was no paperwork.
It's like he was never here.
It's like, can you imagine the conversations this guy's had where he's just like, lying to locks, like, oh yeah, no problem, we're getting it signed, my lawyer's just looking at the last page, there's some wording he did. Like, how many times did he have to come to this conversation of like, yeah, no, it's the paper's in the mail, the check's in the mail, boss. Right. Like, how did he get away with that? That's the part, the being on campus, the having your name on the door, the actually being on the fields with players, it's just so confusing to me. You were just there volunteering?
Right. Yeah, I mean, pretty much. And you mentioned, you know, Josh Gattis, and there wasn't like an actual contract. But from my understanding, what it was that he agreed with Locks, and he was still down at Bama. And then in between the time that he agreed with Maryland and Maryland was going to announce the contract, Jim Harbaugh offered the offensive coordinator position. And literally in between that time frame, Michigan just got it done quicker. So that's kind of why the Steele situation, in my opinion, is undoubtedly worse than Josh Gattis. But you're exactly right. I mean, at the end of the day, you look at Gunnar Brewer. I mean, he was a guy just like Kevin Steele, verbally agreed, was working, was involved day to day. And then, you know, that one gets done. Then Kevin Steele, obviously, it just goes sideways. I mean, you know, I guess in the real world, you know, it's just extremely uncommon, but, you know, you definitely do see situations where you see someone that's been applying to jobs and then, you know, a couple weeks in, they say, hey, I got an offer somewhere else. And, you know, you felt like you just got them and they just left. And again, it's just like,
yeah, it's just weird without the paperwork.
I agree. And
I think it's a learning experience that Loxley won't do again. You sign the papers, then you show up.
And I think just between the Gattis and now the Steele situation, I'd imagine things would change. You know, I guess we'll see next cycle. But yeah, it was not a good look to be caught kind of scrambling like that.
Well, for at least a little bit of time, I felt comfortable. I relaxed a little bit. Now we got a DC in place. Well, nope, we don't have a DC in place. Is there any rumors? What's the latest? What's happening with the open? Because there's a lot of coaching positions open.
Why is it Brian Flores? Staff.
Yeah. I said this to Ryan early on. As soon as the Brian Flores thing came out, I was like, well, if he's never going to work in the NFL anymore, he should definitely should get on the phone with him.
He could be right up the street from the Supreme Court for when he needs to go down for his hearings. It'd
easy
be great.
Access.
Yeah. That would be cool, but it sounds like it'll be Brian Williams that takes over defensive coordinator. Lance Thompson, we mentioned obviously on the site, national media reported it. Florida Atlantic inside linebacker coach. He'll likely come to Maryland and take that inside linebacker position. Louisiana coach Wes Neighbors, he will come in and fill in Brian Stewart's role as the safeties coach. That should fill out the defensive side of the ball. At the end of the day, I mean, we're just kind of, from my end, I'm expecting just official announcements from the program probably later this week. So again, you know, Maryland didn't really have to drag out too long, and it was good for Locks for getting this done. But, you know, it looks like this is the staff for 2022.
Well, you mentioned Lance Thompson expected to replace Brawley Evans. That's important to me. The inside linebacker position is important on this team. There's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of youth there, right? And tell me a little bit about this guy. What does he bring to the table? What can Terps fans look for from him?
Yeah, he's definitely made some stops at Alabama, LSU, South Carolina. Okay. He's coming from Florida Atlantic. He did get caught for or busted for recruiting violation when he was down in South Carolina.
Who has it these days? Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, at least it's not NIL.
On this team. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so he's another guy that brings in a lot of experience with the from the room. He actually was also named the Rivals Recruiter of the Year back in 2008, and then an ESPN Recruiter of the Year again in 2014. He's be able to coach Mark Barron, LaRon Landry, Trent Richardson, Julio Jones, all guys that he's recruited during his stays at various programs. You definitely need a guy when you mentioned, just the inexperience with Maryland inside linebacker room to add a guy that has that experience at all these stops is definitely big for the defense.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You're speaking dirty to me. I like it. That sounds good.
Recruiter of the year always
sounds good. I mean, I don't know how Julio Jones would play at inside linebacker, but I like it either way. Work with him.
That's a new kind of talking dirty around here.
Dirty Terps, baby.
That's right. Man, so any other observations, I guess, of the off season, any changes to potentially becoming?
Everyone
we wanted to, do you think?
I would say so. I mean, at the end of the day, I know Coach Zon Berden, it sounded like he kind of wanted more money and elevation and title. It just didn't really, Maryland has a passing game coordinator. They had, obviously, Mike Miller got promoted to co-offensive coordinator. So that position wasn't there. I think at the end of the day, Brian Stewart was just kind of a sticky situation, and it felt like, it just felt like that was apparent from the get-go, especially, from the latter part of the season when Brian Williams is kind of taking over, calling plays for the defense, things like that. And then obviously with Kevin Steele coming in, having to accept that demotion, and then Kevin Steele doesn't stay. So it's like, what happens with Stewart? So obviously parting ways, I think that kind of helps. So I think at this point, it'll probably be off-field roles, analyst guys. So we'll see. No rumblings just yet, though.
Yeah, I think that this is kind of that part of the year where, spring ball's come and the offseason's kind of over for a little bit. And this is kind of year where you can really look back and see whether the departures really hurt. Because when the departures happen, they hurt. Because you fall in love with these guys. You fall in love with the idea of these guys. Right. We talk about the Nick J. DeGeneres of the world where we're like, we just had high hopes. But when you get to see where they go versus you, I feel like you kind of get the whole picture kind of thing. Because if people leave and they're signing with Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, you know, USC, and you're like, oh, crap, like, they upgraded. They, like, went, like, we lost someone.
Yeah.
But we didn't really have much of that this year. Like, I feel like past years there were a couple, at least, especially in the coaching ranks, where, you know, Loxley brings in his buddies and they, you know, prove it and they go on to another thing. Our coaches left to either equal or lesser levels. Our players left to equal or lesser levels. I see all of it, I'm not hurt by anything.
The players to me were just getting opportunities. It was players that knew they weren't going to have the opportunities here, that they could get them elsewhere at a smaller school that needed, you know, help at those positions. And really the only player I'm still a little hurt on is Brandon Jennings. That was the only one.
100%. That one hurt a lot. But again, he's playing a step down.
Yeah,
he didn't end up where Kansas we
State.
He was.
I don't know if Kansas State is a step down. Is it Alabama or any of these big guys out there? No, but Kansas State's still a formidable football school.
Yeah, so Power Five. I mean, he'll probably sounds like he'll start down at Kansas State. Sounds like he was kind of recruited to be that like last missing piece. I believe if I read correctly, they returned 10 of 11 starters on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that's kind of that was a big fit. But you're right.
He's,
you know,
he's the 11th starter. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I kind of agree. You know, Maryland didn't really lose anyone too critical. You know, and I will say staff wise, I think just kind of having Mike Miller, Brian Williams, Brian Braswell, those guys were very critical, kind of on the field, off the field. Those are guys that really I always heard very high things about. So I think just keeping those guys, obviously Miller, giving him that co-offensive coordinator title, and Brian Williams expected to be defensive coordinator. So those are guys that kind of just been able to get opportunities throughout their 10 years at Maryland so far. You know, just giving them that chance to the elevated role, elevated title, things like that. So I think that's something that Locks is doing a good job of.
And I want to give Brian Williams a little bit of credit here, too, that he could have very easily got his feelings hurt when they brought somebody else in to be the defensive coordinator, since they had already let him do it in the bowl game. And I'm sure there were conversations that, you know, you're our top guy, we're going to look elsewhere. You look at this Josh Gattis situation. Basically, from what I've heard, that's why he bailed, is that when they thought Harbaugh was leaving, he wasn't getting looks at being the next head coach.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And so he was in his feels and is like, I'm going to go somewhere else and forget you guys.
Yeah.
So, like, Williams could have very easily done that same thing, and we couldn't hold it against him. But he was willing to know, like, yes, I'm ready for this, but I'm also willing for you to bring in some huge name that I can learn under for a year or two and develop to be that guy for you next, to be that coach in waiting, even if it is at a coordinator level.
Right.
So it's really cool they did that, and it's good to see that it didn't really burn a bridge there with him.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
I agree 100%. With that.
All right, well, we got to talk basketball, although things are not good. Still struggling down the stretch now, under 500 on the season, 11-12 overall. 3-9 in the conference, blowout loss to the Buckeyes the other night, 82-67. Not a whole lot of good really to talk about with this squad. I mean, this is the latest in the year that they've been under 500 since 92-93. Let me just tell you, that was 30 years ago, fellas, for the guys who can't do math.
I was 4, and I'm not sure Ahmed was around.
I was Ahmed born was that not. Year.
Okay, there you go.
Fred, how old were you?
I was 10. I guess the sole bright spot, if you want to call it, has been Dante Scott. He's the only one out there that seems to be giving his all, his full-on effort every night. 25.6 rebounds, both leading the team in those categories Sunday versus OSU. We can sit here and we can pick apart the roster like we have in previous episodes and what's going wrong. This season is a disaster. Like, that's what you label this year. It's a disaster.
We were wrong.
On all levels, yes. None of the transfer prospects that came in have been anywhere near what we expected them to be. You know, having Mark Turgeon bail on the season, you know, 5 games into the year. Obviously, nobody saw that coming. It's been a shit show, right? But the Turgeon situation Manning situation, right? The coaching situation is what everybody wants to know. If anybody is hanging on to hope about still supporting this team, the future rides on this next hire being the right hire. And we've talked names over the last few weeks on the show. Is there anybody that seems to be getting a little bit more, potential, you know.
Yeah, things are kind of moving. I get what you're saying. But it seems like kind of, and I mentioned it kind of every time I've brought up the coaching vacancy. USC head coach Andy Enfield, I've heard he has several ties to the university. Obviously, yeah. He's a recent grad, or not recent grad, he is a grad, Hopkins grad, and just has very close ties with several people in the athletic department. I've heard financially, he is attainable. And I've heard Maryland has about $8 to $10 million. I've heard various answers in terms of for buyout money. But there are other candidates. Kevin Willard from Seton Hall always comes up. Ed Cooley at Providence. He's another name that's come up, though. It just doesn't really feel like he is a viable candidate. And I've already seen news this week. I believe John Rothstein reported that Providence is already going to try and do everything they can to keep him there. Obviously, Maryland fans have already seen Rick Pitino. Bruce Pearl, both of those guys have kind of come off the table. Pitino not officially just yet, but there's rumors that Iona and Pitino are nearing that lifetime contract. And then another one I actually wrote about today, a national writer from The Athletic brought it up. Cincinnati head coach Wes Miller. I think that's a pretty intriguing name. He's a guy that I believe he's 38 years old. He's from UNC, spent 10 years at UNC Greensboro before taking on that Cincinnati job. And then last name, Kelvin Sampson, the longtime head coach. He's down at Houston now, took Houston to the Final Four last year. So, multiple candidates that are out there. It just doesn't feel like there's a clear-cut answer, but I've kind of just felt like Andy Enfield. It seems like there's been consistent interest.
In my front runner from the beginning.
Yeah.
It feels the most like Gary Williams. It's like a well-to-do coach at a big-time school, but is always going to be second fiddle to football. That's what, Gary left Ohio State for probably from better, facilities, better money, better everything available at that moment, and going into this disaster that was Maryland basketball at the time. But he was never going to be the show in Columbus. Right. And he came here and he was the show. And so that's why Enfield's always felt that way for me. The Mark Pope thing from BYU is like a hands off for me. That's no deal. BYU is a totally different animal than the DC fan base that just ate Mark Turgeon alive.
Right.
These people aren't eating chocolate. They're not cussing out and going after your family on the weekends. Like, that is not the guy I want anywhere near Maryland's program. I don't understand that one at all. And the Rick Pitino lifetime contract just makes me giggle because, what is the risk of giving an 80-year-old a lifetime contract? Yeah. How many years is this contract actually going to be
for? Yeah.
Like, when you got these 50-year-olds, 45-year-olds getting lifetime contracts, you're like, you're the best, and we're going to pay you for however long you want to be here. We're going to pay you till you can breathe for the next 5 years. All right? Yeah. Like, it's a regular contract.
It's just the school trying to protect itself. It's a school in a little bit of a panic mode. They've heard his name connected to the program and probably other programs that they're just trying to do it to save face.
A 5-year contract is a life-year contract. Come.
But then financially, they can just rework the contract so that, if he does leave it in a 1% scenario, and, buyout is just extraordinarily high, and that's kind of the scenario. So, but yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, 15-year contract, no, that's not realistic. He ain't going until 95.
Right. Well, I think the Enfield deal makes a whole lot of sense. He's got a lot of local ties. Like you said, I think he got some sort of degree from Maryland, didn't he, at some point? Not just Hopkins.
Graduate degree.
Graduate degree from Maryland, right. So he's got the local ties. He's an East Coast guy. So we'll see what happens. No decision's going to be made until the year's over, obviously.
Dude, we're still paying a recruiting firm, which still blows my mind. That's like the biggest racket in all of sports.
But we have no money. Wasted on other things.
The hospitals do the same thing. Cool. I'll be a fake Jayco. Get out of here.
Well, Ahmed, man, we appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show live tonight. For you Shell and Tell fans out there, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Ahmed, tell them where everybody can find Inside Black and Gold, both website and social media.
Yep, you can find us online at ahmedgafir.substack.com. You can find us on Twitter at Inside Black Gold. Find us on Instagram, Inside Black Gold as well. And you can search us on Facebook, Inside the Black and Gold. You can find me on Twitter, Gafir the Turtle. So appreciate the episode, guys. It was always good.
And all of those things can be found in our bio link, which you all, I'm sure, are following Shell and Tell at this point, whether you're Birdland BS or Shell and Tell fans. Our bio link has links to all Ahmed's stuff, all our stuff. You can check that out right in our description.
Ahmed, appreciate you joining us, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, guys.